Greetings to everyone, and thanks so much for joining us. We're standing here on the corner of Wall Street and Main Street. We'll be speaking with some of the top minds and biggest names from both worlds. I'm your host, Douglas Blake, and this is the Wall and Main Podcast. Greetings and welcome to the Wall and Main Podcast. We're joined today by the Senior Principal and Portfolio Manager for Eagle Point Credit Management, LLC, Daniel Koh. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I know our listeners are going to wonder how we can take something that's so Wall Street and try to get a little bit of Main Street out of it. But I actually think CLOs are the perfect place to start. Daniel, what is a CLO? Can you give us a very high-level overview of exactly what that means?
Sure. I mean, CLO stands for collateralized loan obligation. And obviously, with these acronyms, I mean, people immediately are on their defense, right? CLO sounds like CDO. You know, those are the things that ultimately caused the global financial crisis. And you know, I guess the key difference really is that CDOs were backed by these subprime mortgages, which obviously were bad collateral, whereas CLOs are actually backed by loans or loans that are made to kind of private companies or some public as well. And so these corporate loans have had a history of performing very well. I mean, if you look at the returns of these kind of senior secured loans in, I think, 27 out of the past 3 years, they've had positive returns, to that asset class. And so when you kind of build CLOs with a good kind of building block, that's led to ultimately good returns for CLOs. So CLOs, you've got these corporate loans that have generally had positive returns in, 27 out of the past 30 years. And then you have on the kind of the liability side, you have, I guess, this financing that's a non-mark-to-market. It's, 12, 13 year sort of maturity. So you don't have any sort of kind of margin calls within the structure. And so that has allowed these CLO structures to really kind of outperform over time. I mean, we think of ultimately these CLOs as kind of better versions of a bank, frankly. If you kind of think of a CLO versus a bank, they're both roughly, let's say, 10 times levered. And obviously that sounds scary, but versus a bank, CLOs have kind of much more optimal kind of leverage, meaning that, again, it's non-mark-to-market financing. So unlike a bank, there's no kind of possibility of a run on the bank, right? The banks are ultimately funded by deposits, which could leave within a day or two. And we certainly saw that earlier this year with kind of the regional banks. Whereas CLOs, you've got 12, 13 year financing, non-mark to market, and there's no concept of a run on the bank or a margin call. And then in addition to that, I mean, because CLOs have this great financing, you can make kind of loans. Ultimately, banks are in the business of creating net interest margin. And that means that they need to kind of ultimately kind of, lend as a bank. And instead, whereas they have to kind of keep some cash on hand because of the fear of potentially, depositors wanting their money back, CLOs can just kind of invest in loans and not have to worry about that. So, we do think that.
To just kind of jump in here and make sure that we're serving the side of this podcast that's on Main Street. So a CLO is basically a bundle of loans that's been sort of packaged together. Is that an accurate place to start the conversation?
Definitely. I mean, that's at a high level.
Okay.
A bundle and of then corporate loans.
So corporate loans, and then you're going to see tranches. Right. And it's going to be maybe higher credit and then some sort of medium credit and then lower credit. And those are sort of packaged together. Is that the typical structure for one of these CLOs?
That's right. And so it's kind of an efficient way for investors to gain exposure to a portfolio of corporate loans. So, it's 150 to 250 kind of corporate loans or issuers. So it's highly diverse. And then you, I guess Wall Street word is tranche, or I guess a more Main Street word would be just to slice it up. So you say, okay, at the top Of the capital structure, you have kind of the safest investment, and that's rated AAA. And you know, you'll, because you're kind of first in line to receive interest and principal, you know, you're going to get kind of the lowest return, but the safest return. And if you look back historically, you know, the AAA and AA tranche in CLOs has never ever taken a loss. So you've got the AAA, you got the AA, which is kind of the second pay typically. Then you've got a, you know, a single A, a triple B, and then a double B tranche. So double B kind of being the junior most kind of, I guess, debt tranche within the capital structure. And then finally, you have the equity kind of position, or the CLO equity, which is the residual. Now, they receive kind of everything that's kind of left over at the end. Now, to the extent that there are losses within the portfolio, one would think, oh, it's just kind of bottoms up losses. So you see kind of the equity taking a hit, but that's not necessarily what's transpired within the CLO market, because there's this concept of a reinvestment period. The reinvestment period allows the collateral manager of the CLO to kind of reinvest recoveries on kind of any defaults, and then kind of buy into kind of discounted loans. So typically, you know, that's, you know, pretty correlated. When there are losses on the portfolio, typically loans are trading at a big enough discount. And we've seen through multiple different cycles that CLOs have come out of these kind of downturns better than they did going in.
So can we unpack that for a second? So, and let me go back to the top again and just say, Eagle Point is a manager or an originator of these CLOs? What does your company do?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Eagle Point is, I guess, an investor in these CLO tranches. So we specialize in buying the CLO equity as well as the junior debt portions of the stack. We do believe that we're the largest third-party kind of CLO equity buyer in the world. And because of that, I guess we've been able to, I guess, also grow on the CLO debt side. And are probably one of the top trading counterparties to the streets, today.
Got it. And if I heard you right, CLOs are kind of like a living organism where you can reinvest proceeds within the CLO to maybe improve the fundamentals of it. Or did I not hear that right?
No, that's absolutely right. And that's kind of what makes it different from other kind of cousins that it has in terms of like CDOs or some of these residential backed stuff, or even the commercial backed securities, is that we have this concept of a reinvestment period. So what that means is that there's a CLO collateral manager, basically a credit manager, who's buying and selling loans and making relative value decisions on behalf of the CLO. So during the reinvestment period, which is typically 5 years, you have the ability to kind of sell out of credits that you don't like, and then take those proceeds and go buy something that you like better. Or if to the extent that there are defaults, and defaults are kind of historically been and in the 3% range, and today we're much lower than that. Although we do certainly admit, agree that there will be more defaults kind of going forward. Because senior secured loans are at the top of the capital structure, they have a first lien on all the collateral of the issuers. You know, it's had typically a recovery kind of in the, you know, 70% sort of range, give or take. And so you're getting, even though you're defaulting, you're getting, let's say, 70 cents of kind of proceeds back. And with that, you can go and redeploy that into kind of discounted loans.
So if I can ask here, just to kind of make this an interesting conversation, because we're talking about it on the securitization side, but the underlying assets are really spread across the financial services industry and across the economy. And I think this is a great opportunity to speak to you, not just as a manager of CLOs, but really as like a shaman who has his finger on the pulse of all of these different areas of the economy, because you kind of have to, right? You have to manage the credit risk among the entire spectrum of the business world. So can I ask you to give me a letter grade right now, you know, like if we were in school, A+ through F, of the large cap businesses in the US economy, the mid cap businesses, and then the small cap businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll speak to really just the businesses that were that are within CLOs, and these are typically kind of below investment grade companies, call it in the single B to double B range. Certainly not small cap or like no or middle market per se, but these are companies that have kind of 100 million plus of EBITDA every year. And so for those companies, I'd frankly give it a BB plus. The only reason I hesitate and not give them in the A rating is simply because we do see kind of some headwinds coming ahead. But if you look at kind of revenue growth, you look at EBITDA growth, that has continued to persist despite rates kind of going being increased in by 500 basis points in the past year or so. One would think that these somewhat levered companies or below investment grade companies would have really been hurt by these rate increases. But because we've been able to grow both revenue and EBITDA within these companies, despite the rate increases, it has more than offset, I guess, the rise in interest rate costs. Now, does that continue to persist as the it feels like the rate increases are going to kind of flow through the economy more? Sure. And that's something that we will be watching. But to date, it feels like that we've been able to really withstand or kind of able to digest the rate increases so far.
So this is something that I think has been really puzzling investors and consumers and really just people across the spectrum alike. How could we have essentially a run on the regional banks? And as we all have now seen, I think everybody became an expert on hold to maturity treasuries a couple of months ago. How could we see such a dislocation and such a shock to the financial system as we did just a few months ago, and have the S&P drifting right back towards its all-time highs?
Well, yeah, look, I'm not an equities manager, so I'm not gonna assume that I know, I guess, what I'm talking about on the S&P side. But I mean, we're seeing it really on the loan side as well, in that like I said, I guess the credit metrics continue to remain fairly strong, although we do see downgrades and defaults picking up in the near future. But we're seeing kind of the underlying loans, are yielding kind of 9 to 10%. I mean, this is some of the best yields we've seen in the underlying loans in a very, very long time, with kind of rates increasing. As a reminder, these corporate loans are floating rate. And so I guess they've benefited from the increase in rates. And so with CLO equity as well, CLO equity on the asset side and the liability side are both floating rate. And so that has pretty much been offset. And there's no kind of interest rate or duration risk that we've seen within these asset classes. So, I think we'll see kind of how credit plays through over the next kind of 12 months. But so far, I mean, there was really limited impact from the regional banks. I mean, maybe there was a little bit of a sell-off in March due to the overall markets, but there hasn't been any sort of issues that have come to the loan or CLO market, because simply because a lot of these regional banks were not players really in the corporate loan or CLO market.
So, how big is the CLO market?
Yeah, I mean, the CLO market today is about a $1 trillion, give or take. I mean, the loan market today is about 1.5 trillion, give or take. So that's that's a market that has grown pretty exponentially over the past several years. As I guess there has been demand for this product. Simply CLOs are about roughly, call it 60, 65% of the loan market. And it's just produced an efficient way for investors to gain exposure to a pool of diverse corporate loans. And it's just had a really low loss history. If you look kind of look back at the data, you look back at CLO equity kind of pre-global financial crisis, pre-08-09, and only 4% of those have had negative returns. And the median return for the CLO equity kind of pre-global financial crisis was kind of 15%. And that's the median return. And there were plenty that were 20 plus percent. And that's assuming that you invested kind of right before the global financial crisis. So really, one would have thought, oh, that's kind of the worst day to invest. But still, you came away with a median 15% return. You look at the junior debt portion, I already mentioned that the AAA and AA, kind of the first and second pays of the stack, have never, ever taken a loss. But on the junior debt side, you know, the loss rate or the default rate, it has only been, you know, 4 basis points or so for the past 25 years. So just really limited risk of ultimate loss here. But, you know, what it does provide is, despite all that, a pretty much a higher yielding opportunity because it continues to be an asset class that is misunderstood.
So two questions here. I'll do them kind of 1A and then 1B. And I think, you know, given the size of this market and the amount of loans that this market facilitates, so you said before, and I think it's a good point, that this is like a better version of a bank. So it seems to me that businesses of a certain size that are below investment grade rating kind of rely on this market for financing. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes, I agree.
So now let's kind of think about what's going to happen over the next year or two. You know, with interest rates higher, investors certainly on the debt side becoming a little bit more conservative, definitely getting into the turtle shell, as we've seen a rise in, you know, the Fed funds rate, really that's unrivaled percentage wise and from a historical context. I mean, we've had higher rates, but I don't know that we've ever seen them move so far so fast. And I've noticed, and if I could sort of reveal that I know a little bit about this space, and I want to speak to it from the perspective of Wall Street, but I've noticed that issuing is way down. So the two components of the CLO market, you have the secondary market where you can kind of buy these at the price that reflects all of the changes that have happened since they've been issued. So, you know, they can reprice accordingly for better or worse. But then you also have the primary market where they're issuing CLOs. And that market is all about gone away completely this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's gone away completely, but certainly off the pace that we saw last year, which was kind of the second highest volume in the history of the CLO market. You know, I think that the challenge really is that there are third-party investors. So, you know, we are truly just economic animals. We're looking for the best transactions out there, whether it's in the primary market or in the secondary market. And, you know, looking at kind of our blotter, we haven't made a new issue or primary kind of third-party investment in the CLO equity side in a year because right. It just hasn't been attractive. I mean, we've been able to source plenty of interesting investment opportunities in the secondary market. And that's really where we've been focused because the yield differential between secondary and primary today is, you know, 800 to 1,000 basis points of yield. I mean, that's
wow,
pretty material.
But what is that telling us about maybe the next 2 or 3 years in terms of maybe economic outlook? Or what can you explain that phenomenon? And it used to be the opposite, if I'm not mistaken, that you kind of have to offer a higher price on the primaries than on the secondary market.
That's right. I mean, so historically, you know, primary has been a bit more, maybe you pick up 100 or 200 basis points of incremental return, kind of buying primary versus buying basically a new car versus buying a used car. But today, sure, used car price is way more expensive or more valuable. Or maybe you think of it as kind of with the day you drive a new car off the lot, you know, it's worth, you know, 30-40% loss versus where you bought it. And why is this kind of phenomenon occurring? Well, as I mentioned, kind of third-party investors who are just kind of looking for the best deals or best CLOs are investing only in secondary. And the primary market is really driven by, I guess, what we call captive funds. And so these are CLO kind of equity funds that have been created by the CLO collateral manager. And because CLOs require an abundance of equity capital to do these transactions, you know, the collateral managers are looking for investors like, you know, Eagle Point or our competitors to kind of buy the equity. What makes their life easier is if they were to raise their own pool of capital and then were able to control that pool of capital to when they did kind of transactions. if they control these transactions, then they have kind of more certainty on how many CLOs they can get done per year. And, you know, they don't have to worry about kind of not hitting their budgets. And so what we've observed over the past several years is that these CLO equity funds or captive funds have massively underperformed because the CLO collateral manager has very little skin in the game within these funds and are more focused on turning on kind of their management fee stream when they kind of print a brand new CLO. So there's kind of massive agency risk. Clearly, it doesn't make sense for a true third-party investor to be doing primary transactions today, you know, giving up 800 to 1,000 basis points. But these captive funds continue to print CLOs because, you know, there's this agency problem with these collateral managers just focusing on their management fees instead of the actual equity returns.
Right. So the question I think there, and I understand that, and to maybe I can try to resummarize that at, you know, the lower to the level of my economic understanding or financial securitization understanding. So because most of the sure money or the high probability money floats to the top of the tranche in a CLO, that's where the investments are more willingly made. And the people structuring CLOs today, because so little falls to the bottom, so little additional yield maybe trickles down to the equity tranches, the managers are starting to say, well, you know what? You have to pay me a higher fee to run this CLO because there's nothing else in it for me if nothing's going to fall down into that equity pool. Is that kind of what's happening?
No. So I guess it's the equity pool is different from the collateral manager. The collateral manager just kind of receives a fee for managing the credits within the CLO. And then typically, like investors like ourselves are the ones that are taking that kind of residual risk. But I guess these captive funds is what we call it, is funds that were raised by the collateral manager. And instead of coming to third party investors like us, you know, have their own pool of capital to buy their own equity. But, you know, basically because these collateral managers have the added benefit or of turning on their management fee stream, and they're more focused on kind of creating fee streams for themselves than necessarily delivering the highest or best equity returns to their investors. There's this kind of agency problem or just, you know, a lack of alignment of interests, if you will.
Understood.
And so they're doing these CLOs that are in our minds uneconomic and are, you know, I guess in terms of yields, you know, 800 to 1,000 basis points less than what we can source kind of in the secondary market today.
Right. I see. Got it. So, but isn't that a problem? Well, I don't know that we'd call it a problem, but here's my question. So the next time these large companies that are not investment grade need to access capital markets, if they're not issuing as much in terms of new CLOs, are they going to have a hard time either refinancing or accessing these lines of credit or these loans over the next couple of years?
Yeah, no, great question. And so, I mean, we've started to see some of that already in that, there certainly has been a slowdown in new issue loan creation. Because there's just a limited capital that's there, and it's giving us as CLOs at least more pricing power and able to demand kind of higher yields to be able to kind of lend to these, I guess, different companies. Now, I guess one topic that does come up often is this concept kind of a maturity wall, where it's a concept I'm sure that's been, you know, floated in kind of the commercial real estate discussions as well. But what we've observed in the corporate loan side is that this maturity wall just kind of keeps getting pushed out. So we've seen a lot of refinancing activity, frankly, today. A lot of the 2025 maturities have had refinancings where the issuers are willing to pay kind of a higher spread and willing to give kind of an upfront fee to push out the maturities, you know, 2, 3, 5 years from today, so that they don't need to worry about these loans coming due kind of in the next 18, 24 months. That's ultimately been beneficial for CLOs because we receive, I guess, this upfront fee. And in addition, we've received kind of a higher ongoing spread as well. And, you know, if we look at the loan market, the underlying loan market today, there's only about, I think, call it, let's say 4% or so of our portfolio. And don't quote me on that exactly, but it's give or take in that range of the loan market that's, you know, that matures kind of in the next 18 months. So it's a pretty small number, and there's no kind of looming maturity wall that will result in kind of large scale defaults within the loan market, in our opinion.
Right. And so to kind of put a finer point on all of this and maybe a nice bow on it, I think inadvertently your position in managing the risk and the credit across this spectrum gives you unique insight and perspective into the global economy. And I think you have to form your own economic outlook, and certainly in the U.S. economy. So if I could ask us to use this as a portal to see the future, what is the next couple of months? What does the next couple of years look like in terms of an economic outlook here in the U.S. based on what you're seeing from these businesses that participate in the CLO market?
Sure. Let me get my crystal ball out here and take a look. You know, well, what I see is ultimately not as, I mean, everyone is kind of, or not everyone, a lot of people are predicting kind of a mild recession. And I think that that's in line to maybe even more, maybe more of a downturn and not necessarily a large recession here. I mean, we're continuing to see strength within a lot of these companies, despite the rate increases. And maybe that's why the Fed has had such a hard time kind of combating inflation, is because, you know, the companies, a lot of these issuers or a lot of these companies continue to do well, at least on the corporate side. I mean, we've obviously seen cracks within commercial real estate, but, you know, there's not, you know, very much exposure in commercial real estate within CLOs. But if you look at the underlying companies within these CLOs, like I said before, there continues to be revenue and EBITDA growth. Yes, there are some, you know, that have idiosyncratic risks that will ultimately default or be downgraded. So not saying that everything's rosy, but if you look at the overall kind of loan market, overall CLO market, I mean, we're pretty constructive here, and we're seeing opportunities to buy both loans and CLO tranches at a material discount. You know, makes it, in our mind, a very interesting opportunity to invest within CLOs.
Got it. And where do you see, if you could just kind of dust off that crystal ball one more time, where do you see interest rates going from here? Higher, lower, staying around these levels?
Yeah, I mean, definitely seems higher. I mean, because it seems like the Fed still has a bit more work to do with inflation. You know, is it 1, 2, 3, 4 more rate increases? That I don't know. I mean, it really is data dependent. You know, we're at a point where I think that the Fed needs to see the numbers come down to at least slow down. Yes, I know they stopped in the last meeting, but at least the minutes from yesterday seem to indicate that, you know, we're going to see another increase this upcoming month. So, you know, it'll be all kind of data dependent. You know, I'm hoping that we do see the numbers kind of flow through with, you know, rates having increased 500 basis points. But, you know, that's that data sometimes does lag, right? It takes time for that to kind of flow through into the economy. So I think we'll have a pretty good picture of where we'll be kind of in the next 18 months or so, you know, with the data in the kind of the second half of 2023.
Sure. And let's, I want to, that's a great macro perspective. Now I want to go super micro for a second here. One last thing that I want to ask about the CLO markets, and I want to frame it in the context of your experience. So Dan Coe, Senior Principal and Portfolio Manager, Eagle Point Credit Management, LLC. Walk me through Dan Coe's February, March, and April of 2020.
Ah, yes. obviously.
Maybe put away the crystal ball and pull out like the bottle of bourbon.
Right? Yeah, in February of 2020, we were pretty cautious. I mean, I had heard about this COVID thing out in Asia, and obviously it wasn't really a thing kind of in the US, but, you know, I remember, you know, being a little more of a germaphobe than I usually am, because I had no idea. And I guess, you know, a lot of my friends laugh at me and say, wow, I can't believe that you actually took it seriously. And you were right. you were certainly right. And so in March of 2020, obviously, you know, we were really sorry to, you know, hear obviously the loss of life and, you know, everything that happened. But, you know, it was an extremely interesting investing opportunity. And I guess what's the great thing about CLOs is that, again, like I mentioned before, there was no margin calls or anything like that. I mean, we were on the offensive in March of 2020 and April of 2020, pretty much most of 2020, we were on the offensive. And, you know, we've been blessed to have investors with us who in kind of the dark times have doubled down and given us more capital to invest because they know that, you know, CLOs in the long run have really outperformed as an asset class. And so we were buying some of the best equity, the junior debt that we had seen in terms of prices. I mean, we bought a piece of CLO equity at 20 cents on the dollar, you know. Wow. And that's an asset. It's an investment that has obviously, I haven't checked the multiple recently, but it's certainly a very nice multiple and a very nice IRR. So
now, did something similar happen during the global financial crisis where prices sort of collapsed and then recovered?
That's right.
The secondary market, right?
Correct. I mean, like if it traded even lower during the global financial crisis, right. I mean, we got to, you know, 5-10 cents on the dollar for CLO equity. So, you know, those are obviously investments that worked out very, very well. I mean,
did that kind of give you the confidence during the pandemic to say, I've seen this before, and I know this is when you buy with both fists, kind of, you know, the Warren Buffett be greedy when others are fearful kind of thing?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, we had never modeled zero revenues for any of these companies. Right. So that certainly was a first. And everyone says that no cycle is ever like another. So, you know, we were obviously cautious, not knowing kind of how long this could persist, right? I mean, had COVID persisted for, you know, years, we'd be in a different place, or had the government not really stepped in to support the economy, then we'd be in a different place, right? So we were certainly cautious, but we had the benefit of time, certainly with our capital, that, you know, we could not necessarily, we didn't necessarily need to call the bottom and worry about redemptions. We had, I guess, we've set up our fund so that, you know, that's typically, you know, several years before you can ultimately get out. And that's by design. I mean, we've done that so that we can capture opportunities like, you know, the 2020 kind of the COVID, I guess, year of 2020 to make kind of the best investments for our investors.
Sure. And now I think I'll get you out of here on this, because anyone who's been listening must be intrigued in terms of this asset class, probably some hearing about it for the first time, despite the fact that it has such a critical importance in the financial services industry and across the economy. Individual investors usually left out in the dust when it comes to really good products, unfortunately, they're quote unquote institutional products, but CLOs are actually accessible to the masses through different types of structures. Could you describe how CLOs are typically invested in, and then how individual investors could potentially participate?
Yeah, I mean, it's typically for institutional investors. In that, you know, because it's a private placement, it typically requires a certain level of sophistication. But I guess what we have is we have Eagle Point Institutional Income Fund, which gives, I guess, individuals an ability to access this market, in that, you know, you've got a steward like us who is kind of the largest CLO equity investor out there. And so we're, I guess the institutional or professional kind of manager that you're trusting us with your capital to really navigate the CLO market. And this is something that I've been doing pretty much all my career, and the senior partners have been doing, you know, most of, if not all, their careers as well. And so, you know, we bring the experience, we bring kind of the size kind of, and just our leading market share within the market gets us kind of preferential pricing, preferential economics, preferential treatment. And that's ultimately that, you know, I guess the returns that ultimately do flow to our end investors, like the, I guess the individuals that buy into our fund.
And there are even publicly traded CLO funds, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. Eagle Point also manages two publicly traded funds as well under the ticker ECC and EIC within the New York Stock Exchange. So ECC is the equity strategy, primarily focused on majority equity. We're buying majority so that we have these kind of control rights or majority rights within the CLOs. Whereas EIC is more of a focus on kind of the junior debt or the mezzanine tranches of the CLOs. These are the tranches that have had kind of a 4 basis point kind of annual default rate over the past 25 years.
Got it. Excellent. So, I mean, I think I did my best to try to take a very high level concept that's probably a little bit more advanced for a casual listener and filter it through into, you know, the Main Street side of the conversation. And Dan, you really helped me with that. And I think we did a good job of painting the picture of how CLOs could potentially read the tea leaves for the economy. And also how the opportunities that this dislocation can present at times could well be captured through a strategy like collateralized loan obligations. So with that, I really want to thank Dan Coe, Senior Principal and Portfolio Manager, Eagle Point Credit Management, for joining us on the Wall & Main podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Dan, thanks so much.